Welcome, Legal Health Information Exchangers. Today's post comes to you out of the Minnesota Supreme Court, which found that state law permits health information to be shared because HIPAA authorized it. Last week, a colleague of mine shared a really interesting opinion, which was published by the Minnesota Supreme Court. It's called Schneider versus Children's Health Care. And it found that the Minnesota Health Records Act, which appears to allow health information to disclose without patient's consent, where there is a specific authorization in law allowing it, and the court found that you can look to HIPAA as providing such authorization. My first reaction was to declare to my colleague, I think the court got it wrong, and HIPAA is not an authorizing statute. However, the court's reasoning, I think, is worth taking a look at more closely, and I'm particularly interested in how this case might play out in other states, even though it has no binding precedent. It can be looked to as persuasive authority. So the story starts out after parents of a minor child received notice from a Minnesota-based pediatric hospital called Children's, and the notice informed them of a data breach that was caused by a third-party vendor that was used by the hospital's institutionally related foundation. And they got the notice, and then the parents sued, arguing that they never consented to their minor child's information being shared with the foundation for fundraising purposes. And therefore, the hospital was in violation by sharing that information with the foundation. Well, the hospital, Children's, countered to that argument, of course, and asserted that the Minnesota statute did not require it to have to get their consent because HIPAA specifically authorizes disclosures of certain limited information by a hospital to its institutionally related foundation for fundraising purposes. And that's set out in 164.514(f)(1). And ultimately, the court, the Minnesota Supreme Court, agreed with the hospital. So it pointed out that in its analysis, and how did it get there is, you know, what we're looking at. So it first pointed out, the Supreme Court pointed out that the crux of its analysis really turns on the interaction between the Minnesota law, the state law, and HIPAA. And so we had to take a look at what the Minnesota law says, and specifically its subsection concerning the release and disclosure of health records. And essentially, it starts off saying that a provider or person who has health records may not release that information without the signed and dated consent of the patient or the patient's legally authorized representative, which authorizes the release. And then it goes on to say, or if a specific authorization in law exists, which would otherwise authorize the disclosure. So if we take sort of a plain reading of that statutory language, you know, we could, I think, agree that it supports a conclusion that the patient's health records could be disclosed. If there is a specific law out there that specifically, expressly authorizes that the disclosure is authorized. I don't really disagree with that. But then the court goes on to tie in the language in the state law with the sections of HIPAA, which discuss how PHI, protected health information, can be disclosed. And it writes that section 164.502A of the HIPAA privacy rule says, quote, "The HIPAA privacy rule generally prohibits a covered entity from disclosing PHI unless the disclosure is authorized by the HIPAA privacy rule," end quote. The court then goes on to cite that section 514(f)(1) about fundraising and institutionally related foundations of hospitals, saying that, hey, because 514(f)(1) says specifically that a covered entity provider, such as a hospital, can disclose certain demographic information to its institutionally related foundation without a HIPAA authorization, then the court concludes that that is exactly the type of specific authority that is necessary to find that the disclosure was permitted for purposes of the Minnesota statute. All well and good, right? Well, maybe, except that a bit of what the court relies on in its opinion is not exactly what the HIPAA privacy rule actually says. So first, I can't overlook that the court appears to have either inadvertently or perhaps conveniently, but I make no presumptions here, swapped out the privacy rule's use of the word actually permitted with the Minnesota state statute's use of the word authorized. So section 502 of the HIPAA privacy rule actually says, quote, a covered entity or business associate may not use or disclose PHI except as permitted or required by the privacy rule. So we have to sort of ask, can the word permitted and authorized be so easily swapped out and interchangeable? Other provisions of the HIPAA privacy rule suggests that perhaps not. So if we look at a separate section of the privacy rule, 164.512b, it says a covered entity may use or disclose PHI for public health activities to a public health authority that is authorized by law to collect or receive such information. So here, the government regulators and HHS in specifically chose to use the phrase authorized by law instead of saying something like as a public health authority is permitted by law to collect. So could it be that they did that because they do not view permitted and authorized as not precisely interchangeable? I don't know. And then if we look next to that section about the fundraising exception that 514F1 states, it actually correctly states a covered entity may use and disclose to a business associate or an institutionally related foundation the following PHI for purposes of raising funds for its own benefit without an authorization if it meets certain requirements. So again, it's using the word may. It does not expressly state that a covered entity is authorized to disclose certain PHI to institutionally related foundation. It simply says that it may use or disclose under the provision, under the privacy rule exception under 514, and may do so as long as it meets the other requirements in that section. It does not have to obtain a signed HIPAA-compliant authorization in advance of sharing that PHI. So putting aside the other procedural requirements that it might have to meet, you would possibly conclude that that 514F1 fundraising exception under the privacy rule of HIPAA does not really read exactly like a blanket authorization by law, as the Minnesota Supreme Court chose to find for purposes of interpreting its own state statute. So what do you, I was thinking to myself, what might other state courts do in a similar case? So as I mentioned, the Schneider case is not legally binding in courts in other states, of course. Yet it could be cited as persuasive precedent by attorneys attempting to make comparable arguments based on their state laws with wording in the state statute that's similar to the Minnesota statute here. So that made me wonder how such an argument might play out in other states, especially when perhaps it was different information. How about if we're dealing with sensitive information like HIV/AIDS? So I took a look at the New Jersey HIV/AIDS statute, which specifically says that a record containing identifying information about a person who has or is suspected of having AIDS or HIV infection is confidential and may not be disclosed, may only be disclosed for the purposes authorized by the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act. And generally, a signed, written, informed consent, which has to meet very onerous form requirements that it lays out in the statute before HIV/AIDS information can be disclosed to a third party. Now, it does list out six exceptions. The first five are narrowly carved out. Number one is for a narrow carve out for allowing it without informed consent for scientific research if it's anonymized. The second exception is for purposes of audits and program evaluation, again, as long as it's anonymized. The third is to qualified personnel who are involved in diagnosing or treating the person. So we have a strong use case for allowing the information to be disclosed for treatment purposes. Number four, the exception number four is to allow HIV/AIDS to be disclosed to the New Jersey Department of Health as is required by state or federal law. And then last, the fifth exception is as permitted by rules or regulations that may be adopted by the commissioner of the New Jersey Department of Health. And then last but not least, lo and behold, we have a sixth carve out from informed consent for release of HIV/AIDS information that says, in all other instances authorized by state or federal law. Now, if we apply the rationale of the Minnesota Supreme Court to this New Jersey statute, all of the exceptions under the HIPAA privacy rule, which would permit PHI to be used and disclosed without a HIPAA authorization, for instance, treatment, payment, healthcare operations, and all those, would be considered authorized for purposes of applying the authorized by federal law exception in the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act. This would mean, for example, that HIV/AIDS information arguably may be released to any other covered entity for its own healthcare operations, so long as the entity that receives the information also has a relationship with the individual who's the subject of the PHI, and other requirements that come under that section are met. It also means that HIV/AIDS information could arguably be shared with third parties for a much larger list of possible exceptions than just the five narrowly ones carved out specifically under the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act. Was this an outcome that the New Jersey legislature intended when it enacted this exception to the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act in 1984 before HIPAA even existed? Would the New Jersey Supreme Court follow a similar rationale to the Minnesota Supreme Court to support such an expanded interpretation of the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act? What about other states? How will they interpret similar language in their statutes? Does it matter if the information is considered sensitive, like HIV/AIDS information or genetic information, as opposed to just demographic information, which was what the Minnesota Supreme Court was considering? So many questions. Now, add to this the impact of the information blocking rule. In its published summary of the HIPAA privacy rule, HHS reiterates that a covered entity is permitted but not required to use and disclose PHI without an individual's HIPAA authorization for all of the exceptions that are under the privacy rule. Treatment, payment, healthcare operations, all those that require an opportunity to object, all of those that don't require an opportunity, all of those. However, under the privacy exception to the information blocking rule, an actor, such as a healthcare provider or an HIE/HIN, would only be permitted to decline providing access or exchange of requested EHI if the state or federal law requires one or more preconditions to be satisfied before the exchange or access is permitted. So an individual's signed consent is one such precondition that is often required under state law before certain information can be shared with a third party. However, if consent is not required, then an information blocking rule actor cannot claim the privacy exception and must allow access and exchange of EHI being requested. So with state laws like the New Jersey AIDS Assistance Act, which include an exception to consent when a use and disclosure is, quote, authorized by state or federal law, healthcare providers are caught in a real catch-22 when trying to determine how to interpret the interaction between state law and HIPAA. If you get it wrong at the state level, for example, you release HIV/AIDS information on the basis that you think that HIPAA authorizes it, but a New Jersey court ultimately disagrees with that interpretation, you could get subject potentially to a lawsuit under the statute's private right of action. If you get it wrong at the federal level, for example, you block the EHI from the requester because you decide consent is required, but then the OIG disagrees with you, Then you might be looking at monetary penalties if you're an HIE or HNN, or disincentives if you're an eligible healthcare provider under the information blocking rule. It's a no-win-win, it seems. But there might be a little bit of wiggle room. So for healthcare providers that are information blocking rule actors, the definition of information blocking requires actual knowledge that the interference with access, exchange, and use of EHI is unreasonable. Therefore, if your state does not yet have a legally binding court opinion deciding that HIPAA's exceptions all qualify under the applicable state laws as authorized by federal law, exception to consent, sorry, Minnesota, you're out now, then the OIG should defer to any reasonable interpretation of how such state laws might be interpreted by the applicable state court when evaluating such actors for potential information blocking practices. HIE, HINs, the issue is a bit muddier. The definition of information blocking for these types of actors do not require knowledge of being unreasonable. HIE, HINs are strictly prohibited from any practice that they know or should know is likely to interfere with access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. So if an HIE or HIN initially obtains and stores electronic health information pursuant to a patient's signed consent, then the HIE, HIN may not subsequently interfere with a request for access and exchange of such EHI when it is otherwise permitted by law. So if a state law permits EHI to be shared, quote, if authorized by law, then the HIE, HIN would be faced with having to allow such EHI to be accessed and shared or risk being found to have engaged in information blocking. On the other hand, if the HIE, HIN receives and stores EHI pursuant to a data sharing contract or a HIPAA BAA agreement with a data source of EHI, like a hospital or a provider, the HIE, HIN would not be expected to violate the terms of such restrictions that are otherwise reasonable and not unconscionable. You can take a look at my prior blog post on that issue. So have you had enough? Me too. I think the ultimate lesson here is this stuff is hard. And it's getting harder. It shouldn't have to be that way, but here we are. So if your organization is an actor subject to the information blocking rule, such as a healthcare provider, HIE, HIN, or certified developer of health IT, make sure you consult with a knowledgeable privacy attorney to help you navigate these ever-evolving minefields with healthcare data privacy. Until next time, happy legal HIE.